Blog Talk Radio.
Didn't we all die? Didn't we all die at the start? Aren't we all right? Aren't we all right for the most part? Is there an ending? Really an end to all of this? Or just a beginning? Another beginning, so why resist? Take a breath, let it out, let it in. Just begin again and breathe into a new life. Breathe out all the old ties. Nothing to hold on to anymore. Watch the light, let it shine. Just like being born, but you're wiser.
Hi there, this is Randy Goldberg. Welcome to the Science of Light Show. And we're going to be listening to a talk I gave, the intro to Jungian psychology, and cover some of the basic stuff for people who are interested to learn more about Carl Jung and the psychological model and worldview that he propounded and the depths of his teachings. So hope you enjoy, and let's have a listen And there's a chat room if you want to type any questions you have as we're listening.
Getting him ready to take over the mantle of Pat to be his chosen person. And when they had a big split, then basically
you're talking about Freud and Jung.
The world talking about it up to the second chakra. And anything above that was that was still second chakra. Just the stuff above that, like the transsexual fantasy. So everything is viewed from that prism second chakra. And there's a psychologist in Adler who talks about power, motivation, but he kind of viewed it as a third chakra psychologist. And so Freud, Jung is like the fourth chakra, supposed the highest aspect, kind of like a holistic psychologist, but for mind, body, and spirit.
In what year did he actually put forth his Jung's first work?
Let's see, and then he died in 1961. So all and he's very many prolific. He wrote the 16 volumes of his collected work, over 20,000 pages of writing. So I mean, it's just unbelievable, you know, and there's so many different things. People are probably pretty familiar with Maya Brand and the psychological types, but you know, not as having a big impact against regulations and different things that people before hiring us and so the psychological type model. If Jung had just only written that one thing, it would be amazing topic. It's a fantastic book, and there's a whole so many different aspects of it. Jung wrote about so many different topics, and you know, it's like quicker than psychological types. There's tons of books all about the dynamic of with your main function. He based his psychological types on the astrological elements of fire, air, earth, and water. And he put into all kinds of, he was a scientist, and he made this machine to test people, and he was doing words, association test, and he would test their electromagnetic response on their skin, and that later evolved into what's now the, there's always, he was a medical doctor, and his whole view and perspective was trying to integrate all this wider spiritual stuff into a scientific and rigorous intellectual framework. So it brings both the depth and then applies in an incredible, profound intellect.
Hi,
people. Come in. And I think Danny Goldberg, and I did a class there last year on meditation. And for about the last 5 years, I've been very interested in psychology and thinking through the four courses every semester at the Western Society for Women in Psychology. The newsletter is floating around there. And I recommend people check it out. And their website is just www.jung.org. And they have great classes and workshops. And they're in Austin MacArthur and Fox Hollow Palisades on the other side of the tank. And part of how I got interested in Jung and stuff, I've been very involved in Eastern philosophy. I'm a meditation teacher, and I study in India. They're extremely into the mystical East. And after I turned 40, I had a whole lot of shadow material stuff coming up, and a lot of questions, and was facing a lot of difficulties that struggling a lot of things, and I found the Jung material so helpful for understanding. Jung talks about how the spirituality of the second half of life considers that you're really not able to incorporate a lot of lessons and learnings and stuff until you reach your midlife crisis and go into your second period of life. And in fact, I think that's normal psychological developmental path for people, and that people like me who were obsessed with spirituality in high school and stuff, it's a kind of precocious spirituality. Kind of inappropriate in some ways, because you need to develop your ego, which is your container, and you gotta have a strong container to be able to fill that up. And often, often people who are very early in such a society, often, you know, there might be trauma, different things that building up the normal things of life. You know, usually you build up your outer life. And Jung is totally individual. Every person is individual, and every person's path is going to be individual, and that's the way it leads us. Jung's whole model of growth and his goal of enlightenment is individuation. And that individuation is I think, a much more balanced goal than for the Eastern enlightenment. Enlightenment is sort of the idea that they're going to reach perfection, that, you know, they're going to, whereas individuation is you're going to reach your own unique way of being that you're meant to be, and you're going to find wholeness within your life and within the different, and integrate the different aspects of yourself. So I think it's a much more grounded and balanced kind of approach to that one.
Pressure that they've
extended. Yeah, and Jung was very into this concept of shadow, and part of the shadow side from that, part of what I was struggling with when I was having kind of midlife crisis was after having followed that Eastern model for so long, I was kind of left with against some of the shadow sides that, for instance, anyway, you know, every person and every organization has a shadow, and are neutral, and it's how we use them that things might be positive, or it might be their shadow element that might hit them in a negative way. And so I found that very refreshing, that there can be a split in the piece also about basically, like in the chakras, the lower chakras have more of the basic instinct, and the upper chakras have more of the broad propensities that are more related to archetypes. And archetype is basically just a word to describe the physics, the law of physics in the mental sphere. It says the physics describes the physical laws of nature. Archetype describes how things function in the mental sphere. And so another shadow side of Eastern stuff I found was a rejection of a lot of the human instincts, and, you know, the sex greed, the lower chakra propensities are viewed as negative, and it's just transcend them and elevate yourself and always, you know, they pushed out of your upper chakras. And one of the things,
way up there.
And one of the things that I discovered in learning, and I also do energy work and to hang out with healers and stuff, and one of the things you can see that a person has weak lower chakras, they can't climb the ladder to the upper chakras. They're like these boxes, and that each one is pyramid. The whole type of structure. So every step of the ladder is important, and every aspect of life more and more we can incorporate all the different aspects of life.
Did you say if you're hanging out in the top three, that you're grounding?
Well, I've been grounded sometimes.
Yeah. Is it possible for you to share some of what Peter's been taking shadow flight experiences after 40?
Yeah, so more of it was also different health issues, and one of the views of knowing is that the body, it's like three things that don't lie: your dream, your body, and your emotions. And if you use these as barometers, check in, they're coming from the unconscious. And a lot of times physical ailments can be more emotional and psychological or spiritual issues, that if you're not paying attention to them, they somatize, they concretize into physical health issues. So that was one aspect that was going on for me. And also depression. And there's something that happens part of this model of second half of life spirituality is that, you know, once you reach middle age, you get some perspective on life, that you can start to see through some of the ones you omitted lies maybe we tell ourselves, or ways that we motivate ourselves, that we start to see some of the motivations behind those, or we start to understand you know, some of our, you know, the Eucharist myth of flying to the sun too early in life. But that often happens in the when you're over enthusiastic. And so the middle age, you know, it's kind of a grounding thing, and it's another impact that people might not like to mention is Joseph Campbell. Yeah, he led young men, was totally incorporated and then applied it, meaning stuff in an anthropological way, studying myths and stuff. And so, so much mythology about how there comes a time in life where you need to make a descent. You need to go into the underworld and to explore the darker side of yourself that are scary, that you might not one or two that looked at, particularly when we're younger. And so that's also part of it. And and you know, Joseph Campbell goes into great detail about this, the whole hero myth, and also in shamanic tradition, that very much going into the underworld and bring your allies to take the different scientists and and questions are great and keep them coming. But with a small group, the more we make it to conversation, the better.
To be one of the first ones to deal with the inner child work coming out so different. As addressing the inner child, making friends with the inner child, bring it out so that she can re-blend with their separation quite often.
Yeah.
Sometimes trauma, other times it's terrible to see with the child within gets buried because we're too busy becoming whatever it is.
Yeah, and I mean, basically, inner child stuff, I mean, particularly on the popular concept that popularized by Bradshaw, kind of in the 70s and stuff, so this is basically after Jung, but for sure, there's a great book that can clear that by Jungians about trauma, about the inner world of trauma, by Kausted, Archetypal Defenses of the Personal Spirit, and this is amazing, a book on trauma from a Jungian perspective, and Donald Kausted, I'll talk about, and he goes into great detail about how there's a split that occurs in the psyche when trauma occurs. And basically, we're all traumatized to different extent. We all have wounds. and particularly people who are more drawn to the archetypes. So the archetypes of doing spirituality, all these different things. In fact, our wound is the doorway, and part of that description of going down into your wound, that's another difference with the Eastern model. The Eastern model, I came to realize, is like the spirit-oriented model of always wanting to go out of your body, go towards the transcendental, which is actually a very male-oriented kind of hero quest to seek. And where Jung is always very into paternity and into the fours, and he felt that like Christianity with this emphasis on the Trinity was totally out of balance, that needs to add the feminine to the Father, Son, and the Holy Ghost. So in Jung's approach, instead of that going out, he's all about going into your body, coming embodied, going into your womb, going into your shadow, and so it's much more of a feminine approach. And it's a lot of resonances that I would say with kind of like the pagan movement that's been emerging. Another shadow side of, well, I've already touched that, so with the chakra. So there's sort of a distrust of instinct standing that view if you think that the lower chakra is being negative and you want to avoid the negative and things like that. So, and Jung, on the other hand, says trust your instinct, listen to your dreams. The first thing that happens often when someone goes into analysis, one of the first phases is to get the person, as they start listening to the dream, to sort of loosen up their moral structure and give a little bit more space to the instinct to play and to start to feed one's creative side and see what the unconscious is saying of that. And the instincts and the archetypes are like one continuum. So you can think of it as the chakras, or it could be the light spectrum also. So the upper chakras can be the blue and ultraviolet light, and the lower chakras and the archetypes are there. The lower chakras and lower frequencies are the instincts. And but they all of our whole psyche. And that's never, and there's a lot of different kinds of schools of psychology and stuff done. And Jungian psychology has a very broad definition of the psyche. The psyche is the Latin word for soul. So the psyche just includes everything. And even material objects can be endowed with soul meaning and certain power and like that. So, so with this trauma issue, the one of the things that happens when someone gets traumatized is there comes a split in the psyche. And what usually happens is one part becomes precociously advanced, and the other part becomes regressed. And so the part that becomes, and so a lot of creative people have these incredible gifts, and then they also have the real dark side, like Michael Jackson, as an example. Who knows if he is guilty or whatever, but if he was, that would be the split there that talks about having a traumatized childhood. And you can see that he had some amazing abilities on one hand, but then there could be also, and that's something that Jung talks about, is the psyche always wants balance. And from the ego point of view, the ego always wants to be in a good light and feel good about itself. And this is part of what happens with the shadow dynamic, is that therefore the ego doesn't want to admit that the shadowy parts of the personality that reflect badly on him and them, that And one view of the psyche is sort of like a globe, and then the ego would be one circle, small circle there. And Jung's definition of ego is just our conscious mind, what we think of ourselves. As our conscious reflection. But that's actually a small part of the globe. It's much bigger. And there's a great description of Jung's is that modern man is smoking a cigar that is actually a stick of dynamite. And he's sitting there smuggling. And so the cigar is the unconscious. So our conscious mind is like the tip of the iceberg. And there's so much that happens not only in an unconscious, but within, you know, and people that have been around holistic stuff. There's so many different dimensions and so many different aspects of life things that particularly, example, you talk about how when different cultures have their spiritual tradition and their culture suppressed, that often there's a kind of spiritual loss, deep moral degeneration, they lose meaning, the meaning of life. And Jung felt that modern man is also coming into that symbol, the old, our old mythological symbol, you know, since the time of like Nietzsche. Nietzsche had this famous phrase, God is dead. And what he was talking about is the image of God, a mythology, a symbol, the way the church goes to God in the church when it's becoming very dry, not sustaining us in the way. We can't believe it 100% like we used to and stuff. So he didn't mean that, you know, physically God is dead, but that it's no longer working for us. So that modern man has lost that way of connecting with self. And at the same time, modern people are cut off from their instincts also. So that's why then you see so much compensation through taking drugs and drinking, and the very modern decisions that look to the state of the world. And well, Jung tried as much as he can to not be a theologian and not to be a metaphysician. So, for instance, with God, he was talking about the God image. That whether God exists or not, that I can't say, and I don't want to get caught up in all the different arguments that happen about that with the theology. I just want to talk about how even if God doesn't exist, you can know empirically that people who involve themselves with the God image and stuff have a lot of different benefits in their life. And that's something we should look at concretely and consider the importance of that. And then, like when we go into towards the Joseph Campbell and the mythology, you can see that really explored in so many ways. So Jung was fascinated with Eastern philosophy, talk about reincarnation. And Jung had tons of different experiences with, Jung was very psychic, very intuitional. If you read Dream Reflections, Memories, his autobiography, he goes into great detail of all, you know, his whole life was so filled with so many different, he uses the word numinous, which means that something has power from the unconscious. So when we feel a spirit move spiritually, that's a numinous effect happening on us. But it can also be negative. The Wicked Witch of the West, he's also numinous. When we feel that stirring deep within us, that's a numinous phenomenon. And he was very much into paradoxes. And that particularly if he's going to talk about God, God is something that can't be talked about and is mysterious. And so that's why he put so much emphasis on symbols. because the symbol is a bridge between, say, something like the spirit realm and our concrete, finite, logical mind and language stuff. And that's why the importance of listening to the dream. The dream speaks in the symbolic language of the unconscious. And then you get a way to communicate and access knowledge from there. And he would say that knowledge you get will never be complete, fully complete in the intellectual sense. So you may intellectually never 100% know that God exists or that reincarnation happens or it's supposed to be real. But they're important phenomena and aspects of life, and one that was totally cut out from traditional clues and to have a model that's big enough to bring all those things in. And so I mean, he had tons of experiences of seances and the little haunted houses and all kinds of stuff that they talked a lot about. So he loved Freud. Freud was a genius, and he was really in awe of Freud, and really loved his concept. He'd go on different Freud exploring dreams and stuff. But there came a time when Freud was mentoring him to be the person to take over and to be the next spokesperson for podium psychology. And so Freud was kind of a father figure, you know. But then there just became the split that Freud used to tell Jung, we have to make a battle of this sexual dogma. That has to be something that we can't get an inch on. It's really important that that's our central pillar, and we're going to have influence and push our idea of psychotherapy into society. Really, that's the most important thing. And Jung just totally reacted against that. Jung's own father was a priest who Jung was very disillusioned with. He never had a strong connection with him, and he always felt disappointed that his father, who was himself kind of depressed and unhappy, and he wasn't really fulfilled being a priest, but he never chose to go outside of the box, outside of church dogma and stuff. And, something like that, whatever. I don't think it was Catholic. Some minister, the pastor. So Jung was always intuitional, always sensitive, and always fascinated with the occult and esoteric stuff and spirituality in general. That's a great story of when he was a child. This is like illustration of how dreams are important to him. He had this. I guess this was a fantasy as a child, about 10 years old. He was looking at the cathedral. They had this great cathedral in his village. So he had this thought, and it was too scary and overwhelming, and he froze up, and he had a fever, and he was in bed for about 3 days, and he just felt this war inside him, that some thought that wants to think, but it's too blasphemous, and it's too horrible to think. And finally, after 3 days, he finally allowed himself to have the thought. What the thought was is God's on heaven, and he has a ship, and a turd comes down and crushes the cathedral. And that was so dogmatic and so blasphemous, and it's a horrible thing. You're not allowed to say something about it. You're not allowed to think about it. And but after he allowed himself to have it, he felt totally free and totally liberated and was so happy. That Freud was always, from a young age, was rebelling against dogma and stuff. And so Jung was ready to hand over the mantle to him, and Freud and and those just they just started arguing more and more about what Jung was writing and his ideas and how he wanted to direct. He wanted to take psychology. So it was just came to us, and they said, okay, they used to have several correspondence, like letters and stuff, and something like something to story that, there's this shadow side of me that's coming out that as a friend I'll be happy to point out to you. You can be nice to him, and you'll never go back. Freud never go back. So they had a complete split. Another interesting thing from Jung's childhood, he's a very sensitive child, and he didn't have a lot of people he could share his inner world with. And he was alienated from his father, and a little bit overwhelmed by his mother. And so he had, some strong feelings of hurt and different things, and couldn't find playmates to connect with. This is kind of rich inner life that he had. So he took his pencil eraser, he had a long pencil eraser, and he carved it into this little man. He like painted a black coat on him and a top hat, and he took this little man that he so carefully carved, and he put him in a box, and he put him up on a beam in the attic. And it was like his little secret that he had this special friend. And after that, he felt a lot better. He always felt like he had his little special friend that had a very healing effect on him. And that definitely was really young. They always had this wild, creative.
It's kind of an interesting family life, but it is.
Yeah, and then he also devotes a lot talking about the mother complex. He had a lot of conflicts with his mother, and so he was kind of alienated and not very close to his father, and was very close to his mother, but felt his mother was kind of irrational and overbearing.
And I miss marriage life. It's different family.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And then... another part of the split with Freud that relates to this is he had his midlife crisis, and being really influenced and feeling very connected with Freud, he felt he'd say that break came, and within himself there was like this split. There was something new that was emerging, and he had his own descent into the underworld that for several years he did nothing but go. He kept seeing his patients and stuff, so he kept his outer world together and supporting his family. But he would just go and make mud castles in the little stream by the lake that was near him, and he'd just draw and just like came over to his unconscious. And he was very unsure about what direction his life was going to take at that time. And it was so crushing to his ego, this whole split with Freud, and it meant so much to him, and he realized that Freud was a genius and stuff. So he had a couple of years of incredible inner turmoil, which were basically his descent to the world and into his unconscious. And then he emerged out of that with the help of, he was doing analysis with contemporary with a woman named Toni Wolff, and he had an affair with her that lasted most of his life, and he would even bring her, she lived in the same town, and he would bring her to the Thanksgiving coming up. He would be there at the Thanksgiving, it was very, particularly back then, kind of unimaginable and very unorthodox. Jung himself, people point out, split over passion. And sexuality and passion is a huge issue that we all have to deal with. And Jung sort of felt that men were kind of polyamorous and that women were more monogamous. And anyway, sexuality is something that is definitely something that more a split. Interesting thing.
Well, I up and have it 2 houses to be built in one and stand over to the other.
Yeah, when he built the house, he made the stone himself. And this is, well, at the same time, you know, he wrote 20,000 pages. And so he designed and built this house with a huge medieval tower, and he kept adding different components to that through time, and he carved different symbolic and important things into that house. And that was his retreat place, and that's where he would write, and he needed a lot of seclusion for his meditative contemplative life and his writing and stuff. And something like that, I'm not sure the number. One of them, one of them became a famous psychologist in those thoughts, as well as his wife wrote a great book on the Grail. go into those rotten feelings, and if you allow them, you know, out of compost comes this little rich soil. Which, so you have a rebirth. And one of the models is that, like, as you grow to a certain extent, your roots then hit the container it's growing in. So that container is like your belief system or your religious model or your ethical system or whatever your limits and beliefs are. And then, so that container makes something that you're very attached to that has served you so well in your growing up and in the first part of your life. And so you might have so much allegiance to that container. To grow, you need to come along and mash that container and allow for a new. And that's why the mythology of Christianity is also all about the dying and then rebirth occurs. And and it's also Christ is very much a solar figure. That's Joseph Campbell goes into great detail of all the earlier mythologies and the sun gods, and you know, there's so much about our kingdom. King is also a solar figure, and so much in Christianity adores. And Jung really likes the mythological model of alchemy, which is much more complex and allows for a lot more kind of an individuation process to happen. So in the model of alchemy, the phases are that you first need to find the prima materia that you're going to work on. So before you start your experiment of transforming yourself, and alchemists were trying to turn lead into gold. They were, you know, it's symbolic of turning your baser aspect into divine aspect. So first you got to start with the material you're working on. And Jung would say that you don't get to that prima materia usually until like your midlife, and you start to sink down into the dirt, the mud and box of yourself. Start to, you get some of your illusions and your things shattered, and then you grab on to some of that basic building block stuff. And then the first stage is the negredo stage, where it turns black, it turns to darkness, and that's a depressive phase, and you decay, and it's often described in some traditions, the dark night of the soul, and when you go through that descent, that earlier anthropological model, after enduring and being willing to, part of the model of emotions, it's emotions flow. Emotions, water is a very apt and often used allegory for emotions. If your emotions are stuck, they're frozen up, they don't move, they're frozen, stuck. Now, if we're frozen, it's not going to be frozen anywhere. And that's one of the fears when you get into depression, and it happens sometimes, you know, you can get stuck there and it's frozen. But to be frozen anywhere with emotions does not help you about this. So you want to allow for what's coming in front of the dream.
And that's the end of the first part of my lecture I gave on Jungian psychology, and I will continue the second half next week. And I just want to check in to see, feel free to press 1 if you have any questions or comments or discussion points about Jungian psychology. And there's someone who's here, so I just want to see. Hello there, I'm unmiking you. How are you doing?
Hello, hi, how are you?
Good, and how about you?
I'm doing good.
Good. Did you... Are you able to listen to the talk on about Jung and Jungian psychology?
Yes.
And did it bring up any thoughts or questions or things that you wanted to
Not really. No, not really. I'm just listening.
Yeah, okay, good. Well, I'm going to end it here for now and going to have part two next week. So tune in Monday, 10 o'clock, and go out again. The song I started with is Breathe by the Kennedys. So go kennedysmusic.com. You'll hear some great music. It's from their album, Better Dreams. The song Breathe.
Didn't we all die at the start? Aren't we all right? Aren't we all right for the most part? Is there an ending? Really an end to all of this? Or just a beginning? Another beginning, so why resist? Take a breath, let it out. Let it in, just begin again and breathe into a new life. Breathe out all the old ties, nothing to hold on to anymore. Watch the light, let it shine, just like being born, but you're wiser this time. Opening your eyes, take a breath, let it out.